You're listening to Vatican Radio. Pope Francis on Monday takes off for Sweden for a joint commemoration of the Reformation, together with leaders of the Lutheran World Federation. On Tuesday, he'll also celebrate a Mass for All Saints' Day with the small Catholic community in Sweden and other Nordic nations. On this visit, Francis follows in the footsteps of Pope John Paul II, who in 1989 became the first pontiff to visit the region since the Reformation. Among those helping to coordinate that visit of the Polish Pope was Bishop William Kenny, then serving as Vicar General of the Stockholm Diocese. Today he's Auxiliary of Birmingham in England and co-chair of the International Lutheran Roman Catholic Dialogue. I spoke to him to find out more about the tiny Catholic community in Sweden and what it's expecting from this second papal visit to the country. You worked and taught and were ordained, weren't you, as a bishop in Sweden. Can you tell us something about the Catholic Church there from an outsider's perspective in a certain sense?
It's unusual in the sense that the majority of the members of that church are not Swedish. They are immigrants from various generations who've come to Sweden as workers or as refugees. And I think when I was there, and I'm 10 years away now, it was about 70% of the Catholics had been born in another country, though I have every reason to believe that has not changed. Today, there are many, many more now coming, of course, have come and are coming from the Middle East, not least from Iraq.
There are also Swedes who have converted, though, aren't there, from the Church of Sweden?
There are indeed. I'd say that there are two sort of groups of converts, if you so will. There are those who often come in through marriage. They marry a Catholic and then convert. The more notable ones, I mean the sense of the ones that figure in newspapers and that, tend to be academics or leading people in public life. There's always a trickle of those all of the time coming into the church.
And what do you think this community is expecting from this historical ecumenical event that
will
take place on Monday?
I don't know, if I'm quite honest, because I'm not there daily. What I hope would happen is that they would give a renewed emphasis to ecumenism. I think that the Catholic Church always has had the difficulty in Sweden that its immediate pastoral concerns have overwhelmed it, of just providing mass, sacraments, catechesis, this sort of thing. And so, if you like, other things which are not add-on extras have tended to become add-on extras, such as ecumenism and things like that. I would hope that this very symbolic act of Pope Francis coming to Sweden will renew an interest and enthusiasm for the ecumenical project.
As you say, ecumenism is not perhaps a top priority. And as I've been preparing for this event, I've been getting a sense of the really deep tensions that still lie beneath the very positive message that Catholic and Lutheran leaders are promoting ahead of this event. How difficult is the relationship between Catholics and Lutherans in Sweden today?
I suspect that some of the difficulties come not from the Reformation, but from much more modern areas, as they do, say, here in England, on such matters as the ordination of women, on matters such as what is the view of human sexuality. And I think this is two areas where an awful lot of work has got to happen. We need to examine what not just Catholics, but Lutherans as well, mean by priesthood. We need, I think, a new anthropology in the church, or a renewed anthropology in the church would be better, where we begin to realize what it means to be a human being.
You're also co-chair of the International Dialogue Group between Lutherans and Catholics, aren't you?
That's
correct.
Can
you give us a sense of the progress that you're making at that international level?
I think we are making progress. We're in the usual long discussions at the moment. We're talking about the effects of baptism. We hope to have a document finished on that next year or the year after. I think what has really happened is the joint declaration on the doctrine of justification, which came out in 1999, is like the bomb of the Holy Spirit, where we suddenly realized, or came to the realization, better said, that the issues which we thought divided us don't, and that there's been a lot of misunderstanding stemming out of the political and cultural situation at the time of the Reformation. That happening means we're now trying to find out what is the effect of suddenly discovering there isn't that much that separates you, at least within the field of the doctrine from the Reformation. And that is what we're exploring at the moment. So enormous steps forward have been made without saying we're quite there yet.
The challenge, of course, is getting this sense of progress out into the pews, isn't it? And particularly there in a country like Sweden.
Very much so. And as I say, for the Catholic Church in Sweden, it's very much a matter of surviving, trying to provide the very basic means of forming a Catholic community. And so that is definite. I'd say this is the problem with the ecumenical project in almost all countries, that people become, I would say, in all churches, satisfied with themselves. There's no sense of that sort of crisis of unity. It is always quite an effort. But the fact still remains that the Lutheran dialogue has made enormous progress.
Pope John Paul II, of course, made a visit to Sweden.
He
was
indeed
the first pope to visit the country. What can you tell us perhaps a little bit about the difficulties that you came across in the planning then?
I think the planning then in Sweden wasn't too bad at all, but in Denmark it was very tense. And then Iceland is very much a country for itself in religious matters. And Finland, of course, has always been and tends to be my co-chair of the Lutheran Dialogue at the moment. He's a retired Finnish bishop, Eero Huovinen. And so the situation does differ from country to country. I think the problems, if you like, within Sweden on the relationship are the usual ones where you have a very large church and then a tiny, small minority church. And there is always a tendency for the large church to treat the other church as, you know, as sort of small, and for the small church to always be frightened of Big Brother, if I may put it that way.
And how much do you think has that changed? How different is the church that Francis will find today?
I think the Catholic Church has hardly changed at all, in the sense that it is still very divided among national groups. There are still now the groupings of varied. As I say, there is enormous groups now from the Middle East, and not least with other rites than the Latin Rite. With the Swedish Lutheran Church, very difficult to say. There are definitely signs of great life in various parts, but in other parts you do seem to have a church which the numbers are decreasing so rapidly that there must be questions about how long in certain places it will survive.
It is a very secular country, of course, as well, isn't it? And many people declare themselves to be atheists in national surveys and so on.
Yes.
How receptive do you think people will be to the message that both the Catholic and the Lutheran leadership are bringing there?
I think people are very receptive to the message of, what would I say, again, the social questions, those sorts of things. You usually got plenty of backing for initiatives which the church or churches took on those issues. Also, I think there is another element which is rarely talked about, and that is the people are looking for meaning and very rarely finding it. They no longer look perhaps to the church for it, and that might be a pity, but people, how would I put it? You sometimes get the impression of a sort of people feeling a sense of almost low-level despair, not the sort of despair that leads to suicide or that sort of thing, but a questioning all the time as to what's the meaning of it all, why are we here? And the churches really do have an opportunity there, which they have still not found out how to use, and it certainly wasn't found out in my time either.
So overall, what do you think will be perhaps the most positive outcome of this historic day?
I think one thing most definitely will be that again, the Holy Father, just by going there, will symbolically be stating how important that is. I imagine Francis, as he is in most other European countries, as accepted as a leader, is accepted as somebody who has some understanding of the modern world, and therefore it will mean something that he should himself travel to this. It's not as though they're coming to Rome to see him. He is going to the Lutheran community, and that is vitally important. I think the other thing is, again, as always, when visiting small countries, and Francis seems to be very good at visiting small countries, is it encourages the people there. I can remember during the former papal visit, we were up in Tromsø in the very north of Norway. And at that time, there were about, in the diocese of Tromsø or the vicariate of Tromsø, I think there were about 800 Catholics. And yet we had a Vespers in the evening of the papal visit, and there were over 4,000 people came. And I can remember wandering among the people, asking them why they had come, because they weren't Catholic. And they said, oh, well, they said, all the big noises come to Oslo. They never come here. When somebody thinks we're important enough to come here, we've got to show we appreciate it. I think there will be, on a more national level, the same sort of feelings.
The Pope will be celebrating Mass for the Catholic community on the Tuesday morning, November the 1st. Do you think
That's
there
correct.
Will be a large participation of people, perhaps even from neighbouring countries?
I would imagine so, yes. It's very easy to get to. It's just across the water from Denmark. You can come overnight from Poland, so that it's comparatively easy to get to it.